Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have a really special guest because my book that I wrote, if you've read it, had a central character that went throughout the book, and that's Justin White. And he is joining us for our episode today. I also have on the show Christopher Lee Decker. Chris is my producer, a longtime friend, a family member of sorts, and a mentee, and worked for me many years ago. So we have a great relationship. So let me start with just Justin's introduction. So Justin is born and raised in Santa Cruz, California, where his company is today. He grew up raising animals on his family farm and working in the family landscape business. Justin started work, he'll tell you his story, but when he was a teenager, he started hanging out on the truck and working for his dad. But at the age of 26, right around the time that he and I started working together, he was appointed CEO of the family business and has grown it almost tenfold from about $1 million to over $10 million in the last 5 years. Besides growing and building businesses, Justin is passionate about racing and riding dirt bikes. And remind me, we should ask him about what happened when he had his motorcycle accident and how it affected his running of the company. He's passionate about developing a culture of success in family business and getting more family members excited about working in their family company. And what's special about today's show also is that Chris is an entrepreneur who has read my book, of course, but is thinking forward about his business and how to build something that has a legacy that his son, who is a mere 1 year old, might join him one day. So, guys, welcome to the show today.
Chris, thanks for that, Jonathan.
Yeah, and Chris, I'll just start with you. This is our first show we've done together, so this should be a fun experience.
Absolutely. Thanks for the. I'm actually quite honored to be involved in this episode, specifically as it pertains to Justin and his story being such a critical part of the book. So thanks, guys, for having me.
Yeah. So Justin, you are my most famous client in the landscaping industry. I've been in the industry now for, I think, about 15 years. And you're someone that I have such a long-standing relationship with that it almost, and I've worked with everyone in your family, I almost feel like your family as well. So let's talk about the getting involved in the family business and maybe like tell us a little about your story, why and why you got involved in the family business, because you're very entrepreneurial, and how did you get involved in the family business? So tell us your story.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. And Chris, it's great to be with you today. Wow, what an intro. No pressure or anything, right? Most famous client. Wow, that, Jonathan, that means a lot. I'm really honored to be here today. And I'm excited to just talk to you guys, you know, just kind of reminisce on the journey so far. You know, we're still early on here, but we have a story to tell. And I think we have a story that a lot of people can relate to, whether they've gone through it, they're getting ready to go through it, or like Chris is here, they've got a son or daughter that's looking to take over the business one day, even if that son or daughter is only a year old. So I think at the end of the day, you know, most businesses are family businesses. Most business owners bring their business home, and that means the family's involved, whether they're employees or they talk about it around the dinner table. And so that's how it started for me. It started as a dinner table conversation. You know, my dad would come home from work, and I remember this distinctly, and he talked about his day, meeting with clients, installing these beautiful landscapes. And he, you know, he had a nice set of helpers. It was my dad and 10 to 12 helpers, right? So he was involved with every project, with every invoice, with every client. My mom did the books. It was just your typical mom and pop operation. I'm very proud of what they accomplished. You know, they were able to give us a great life. We grew up on a nice 4-acre ranch in Corralitos, California. Beautiful little spot, 10 minutes from the beach, yet we still had the mountains that we were able to have that influence. And I really started getting interested in the business around high school. And it started to become something. I always thought I was going to go into heavy engineering and go to tractor operating. So I worked for my dad when I was, you know, the first summer I was about 15 when I really did a full 3-month tour. And I just wanted to operate the tractors. So my thing was, I'm going to go to trade school. I'm going to become a tractor operator. That's what I'm going to do. Well, I quickly learned at about 16 that was going to be way too slow. I was going to get bored with that because I was pretty much bored of running equipment. And I wanted to be my dad, who drove around in the nice F-150. And from my point of view, just told everyone what to do and then went to lunch. I was like, that looks like fun. I'm here in the trenches digging holes, and I want to be that guy in the F-150 who's kind of running and calling the shots. So I had this aspiration to get to a higher level in the company pretty quickly. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at where I'm at today, and a lot of questions I get is, you know, where'd you go to college or where'd you get your education? And I took a very different route. I actually dropped out of high school when I was 16. Because it just wasn't my speed. It wasn't where I wanted to be. And, you know, I was probably getting influenced by the not the best crowd, but I dropped out of high school so I could work full time. This was right around 07, 08, and it was right before the big crash in 08. And when the crash happened, you know, me and my dad really got close because the business was going through a very traumatic point, and he needed someone who understood landscaping, but didn't cost a lot of money. So enter his son, who's living under his roof and pretty much willing to work for free. So we pulled through that recession, and that really taught me a lot of lessons. And I really learned a lot during that point of time of how to sell through literally either, you know, you're either going to sell and get projects or the business may not exist in 5 years. So that really propelled me to a point of, you know, having to learn the entire business from selling to estimating all the way through to invoice and completion of projects. And that's what really sparked my interest was the sales side and the chase of trying to land that next client and trying to beat the numbers and beat the goals that you set for yourself on that project. So it was a very different kind of a transition into the business. I didn't go the 4-year college and then come back and take over. I took a more of a grassroots approach, I guess, and got my PhD as a post hole digger rather than at a 4-year college. And, you know, I look back and I have some regrets, but I also am very thankful for that path that I took. And I think it taught me some things. And I guess my message to the listeners is if you're in a position where you didn't have that opportunity to go to college and you don't feel like you're qualified to run a company, there's no degree that says you have to have this degree to run a company or be CEO or anything. And there was a point where I did not feel that I was qualified to run the company, but with your coaching, Jonathan, and my dad's encouragement and confidence, along with my mom, I was able to build up that confidence to take it over and learn through reading books and coaching and all these other ways. And I'm very thankful for that opportunity.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, besides me, who, like your dad, how instrumental was he in building your confidence that you could run the company? How instrumental was your mom? And where, I know your brother and sister are in the company, and, you know, what kind of a role did they play in specifically either building or taking away from your confidence that you could do this?
Yeah. So my dad gave me the confidence because it was his story is similar to mine, where he didn't have any, you know, degree, or he didn't have any prerequisites to run a company. He was a chef and decided that he was going to become a landscaper one day. And he just went at it and got his license, and here we are today. So he really didn't have, you know, any type of education. So that kind of, he helped me to believe in myself that I can do it no matter what my background is. And it was something where my dad really, he looked at me as someone who he had confidence in, even if I didn't have confidence in myself. He was very humble about the business. He didn't need the credit. So he really handed over the keys of the company almost as a, here's an opportunity, just we'll see how you do. Versus I think some founders require their son or daughter to prove themselves to such a degree that the son or daughter gets bored and leaves the company because they weren't given the opportunity to succeed at an early age. And the founder ends up holding onto the company too tight. So, you know, one of the things you wrote about in your book and something that definitely propelled me into the leadership role at KD is my parents getting divorced. And that divorce took a toll, obviously, on our family business. My mom moved out of state. My dad was in a, you know, difficult place. So he wasn't really in the day to day. Like all of a sudden it just happened. And so I stepped up and started running stuff. And he kind of gave me that confidence of, you got this, you can do this. I need some time to figure my life out. And that gave me that opportunity to step up in a time of, you know, kind of turmoil when the company needed a leader. And that was my opportunity that I took. My mom has been a huge supporter of mine since I was born, ever since I could remember. But when we were going through this transition, she was a little more hesitant. And she, I don't think, trusted me as much as maybe my dad did, which kind of gave me that chip on my shoulder, like, well, I'm going to prove her wrong. And that, I thank her for that every day, because had I not had that pressure of having to show her I can do this, while also having my dad's confidence, like those two things worked in tandem to give me that rocket fuel that I can do this. And I've got my dad, and then I'm going to prove my mom wrong. And, you know, me and my mom have a great relationship. We're super close. And she's super proud of me today. But during that time, it was kind of the fuel I needed to go in and work really hard to accomplish that. And, you know, at 25 or 26, all my friends are just kind of screwing off. They're not really focused on their career. They just kind of got back from college. They're still in party mode. So it was going against the grain of my friend group to do this and to hunker down and work 12 to 14 hour days, 6 days a week at a time that all my friends are enjoying their 20s. So there's some sacrifices made. And then you enter my brother and you enter my sister, and they were huge participants in the business. Pretty much from when my brother, really, when he was 18, 19, he really got involved. My sister just kind of dabbled, and she worked for a couple of years and took some time off. And now she's back working full time and she's doing a great job. But my brother's really been a partner of mine, and he stepped up, and without him, you know, I don't think I'd be where I'm at today, or the company would either, because he's provided me that sounding board and that person to kind of be your, you know, he challenges me quite a bit. It's not an easy relationship, but that challenge and that, you know, friction creates a lot of successes at the same time.
Yeah. You know, one thing I admire about both you gentlemen is that you are extensive readers of business books, personal development books.
Yeah.
And I know that reading business books was really important for me as a professional to develop my skills. But like, I'd like each of you, if you don't mind, to talk a little bit about what learning to become a leader looks like. Chris, you as an entrepreneur, Justin, you as an entrepreneur of a larger, you know, more established business, and, you know, and how else you've been able to grow yourself as a leader. So, Chris, do you want to start on that one?
Sure, absolutely. If we're talking about leadership books, the guy that first comes to mind is John Maxwell, and reading his book, The Five Levels of Leadership, and starting to understand that any opportunity to lead, giving the opportunity, you know, giving that position initially is just an invitation. It doesn't mean that you've earned the spot as a leader whatsoever. It's basically square one once you've been given the position. At that point, it's earning the respect of the people around you, developing a deep rapport, understanding their needs, wants, interests, like what keeps them up at night, what do they want to do in their lives, like what's going on, you know, and getting the pulse of the organization at the company. And only then do you have permission to try and leverage those relationships with your team to create results, which brings you to level three. And creating those results in an organization can put stress on those relationships, and then moving on to level four, developing additional leaders, level five, et cetera. This has not been easy for me, because being young and entrepreneurial, I gave myself the title of leader, and at least in the beginning, having success in business and being literally like 23 years old, did not mesh well, because I didn't know how to care for people or to address their needs. I only cared about my own. And so the only thing I've been learning how to do every day is become less and less selfish. And the more I can do that, the more I might earn the title of leader one day.
Well, I want to comment on that before Justin answers the question. And because your story is really interesting and unique, and people who are listening to this business, this is a podcast. If you're in a family business, then you either have the blessing, like Justin had, of a father and a mother who are really supportive and provided confidence, or, you know, maybe you don't have that confidence or, you know, of the parents. Maybe they're constantly raising the bar that you'll never be good enough. Or they're holding things too closely because of their own insecurities. Chris, you were largely absent of a mother and father who were there to support you. So you really like made your own journey yourself. And like an entrepreneur founder of a company, you know, like breaking through barriers. I've seen you break through so many barriers and try so many different startup companies that I think it's incredible. Your story is really incredible. And I know it's profiled really well in your first book, but yeah, what a different journey it is to be an entrepreneur founder of something. You're trying to, you know, find a product and a market that fits, that's worthy of your talents. And Justin, like you had kind of a platform, you know, to step into, and you've certainly expanded it, but it's different. So tell us a little bit about like what, you know, how do you grow yourself as a leader? Is, you know, books, I think, is one thing for sure. But, you know, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. So, you know, there's reading books, and there's so much great stuff. You know, I try to read at least 1 to 2 books a month. And I'm closer to reading like 4 books a month right now. And there's other times where I've been 1 book every 2 months. But, you know, ideally I'm reading 20 plus books a year. One of my favorite authors is Jim Collins, and anything that Jim Collins is involved with. He is just a master around business and combining business and leadership principles. And I love his books because they're all about research-based data. He does these massive research projects, and then he synthesizes and condenses it into a very deliverable message that you can then act on. You know, there's so many days that I'm listening to Jim Collins on my way to work, and within the 15-minute drive, I have completely changed what I was going to do that day. The conversation I was going to have with someone was going to be go from disciplinary to building. And so Jim and his books have given me the ability to reflect on leadership and take an approach that, you know, how can I build other leaders in the organization? And I think if we, you know, we could go big into this tangent of leadership and talk about what leadership means and everything else. But I think for me specifically, how do I develop myself into a leader is absorbing the information that's around me. Books is one part, but the other part is from my team. Your team's going to teach you a lot of lessons, whether it's your father or mother and the people who preceded you, or it's your subordinates and your team who's supporting you. I think there's information and leadership to be learned up and down the organization. And I've personally been taught some of the best leadership principles from first generation immigrants who started working for my dad in the early 90s and have worked for him for over 20, some over 30 years. And they have taught me leadership principles and what it means to be a true provider for their family. I have some of our employees who still to this day send more than half of their paycheck to Mexico to their parents and to their family who they left behind to go pursue a better life. One of my greatest employees, Marco, who actually returned to Mexico a couple years ago and is now back with his kids, he was separated from his wife and kids for 12 years. He did not go back once. And he was here working and sending 70 to 80% of his check back home to his wife and kids while he, stayed in a little tiny studio here and worked 12 hours a day. And he saved up enough money to eventually go back and live with his family, which is kind of was his dream. He is successful in his life now. And I think that's true leadership is doing for others more than yourself, but you still have to give yourself enough attention. And if you don't develop yourself enough in a regular basis, you're going to run out of information and you're going to run out of equity to give out. So I think it's just really, I hate to use the word balance because I don't think that there's ever any way that we can get into a perfect balance. It's always moving. But I do feel that when you absorb the information that's around you and you listen to the folks that are coaches and mentors, but also those who are subordinates and all the way down to your frontline employees, you listen to those people and you look for lessons to be learned. There's lessons to be learned there. So I don't think the learning really for me ever stops. And I was waiting for a table the other day at a really busy restaurant. And this gentleman, I was having a conversation with this gentleman and he ended up running a big business in the Silicon Valley. And funny, actually, Chris, you say John Maxwell, he was a big John Maxwell fan. And we started talking about business and he just started telling me about his journey and his career. And it's like, from that 10-minute conversation before my name got called to go to my table, I learned so much, probably more than I could ever learn from a book. So you just never know what interaction is going to give you some great takeaways. So my thing is just always be open, be open-minded, extremely open-minded, and try to learn from everyone around you. And that's what I continue to do.
I think that's great. I think something that both of you embody more than the way beyond the average male of your age is empathy. Empathy and caring is so important as a leader. And I've seen both of you develop empathy and caring towards others, towards the people you work with, towards your family members, your loved ones. I think it's really extraordinary. And I think it goes to your point that we learn from more than like reading and intellectual assimilation of books, but we learn from our interactions with others, and anyone that we meet can be a mentor or a mentee, and they can switch roles at different times. So yeah. I think it's quite interesting. Chris, I know you have some words you probably want to share on that. This speaks to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this speaks to me a lot. This concept of empathy and caring, and to hear Justin speak about this direct transfer of knowledge, where this 10 minutes speaking with this entrepreneur waiting for a table was more impactful than probably a couple of months of reading at Justin's pace, not to put words in your mouth. But I heard you say that you listen and you look for lessons to be learned. And I can't help but believe that every human being has a story inside of them. Everybody's experienced something, from and to hear that, you know, to hear you say that you've learned some of your most valuable leadership lessons from the first first generation immigrants that have worked for your father and been on the team. I mean, I can't imagine just the simplicity of the knowledge that they're probably able to share with you, because it's just so ingrained, so experienced, so real. And there's something very real about listening to another person's story. And that's all I got. Thanks.
I think that's really well put. And you know, I think it segues us into a conversation about how do we develop others as leaders. You know, is everyone have that capability? I mean, and should we be distinguishing between leaders and developing people into managers? So I'd like to get into that subject, but I think, you know, this is a challenging thing. And I know as a coach, one of my jobs is to provide education and accountability and to focus people, but it's also is to develop people as leaders. And that comes from asking good questions and listening and teasing it out in them. So, Justin, if you could share some of your thoughts on what have been some of the challenges in bringing out, you know, leadership and management potential in some of your people, and, you know, what are things, maybe real stories or situations that have worked that you feel like, you know, were like great learning lessons.
Yes. So there's a lot that goes into developing leaders. And I think the most important one is vulnerability and vulnerability of yourself, because we have this tendency with social media and with these little highlight clips of our life we put online that we're doing amazing. We're doing so great. You know, we just had this fantastic trip to Bali, and then now we're running the company and everything's, you know, just amazing. Well, behind the lens, you know, leadership and running a business is really difficult. And there's a dark side of running a business. You have sacrifices, you have failures, you have super stressful days, and no one posts that stuff. No one posts their failures, right? And some do, but you know, for the most part, you just see a highlight reel. And when you meet someone at a conference and someone's telling you about their company, it's, we're doing this much in revenue, we have this much employees, and we're doing great. We're growing. This is our goal for the next 5 years. But they don't tell you about the struggles and the challenges that they went through to get there. So I think when you develop leaders, an issue that I've had is I have not been as real as I could have been. So my leadership team, when they get there and they have those tough days, they're like, Justin, like, made this sound easy. Like, what, like, this isn't this, I must not be cut out for it, because it's not supposed to be this hard. So I think true vulnerability and sharing, like being the first person to raise your hand when you're like, hey, like mentally I'm off, guys. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm a little off. I feel a little overwhelmed, and I'm not totally, you know, sure about what we're doing or where we're going, and I need some help, rather than having those same emotions and same feelings and then masking them with, you know, positivity 100% of the time. You've got to do a certain amount of hoorah and positive and cheering people up. But if that's all you do and you never talk about the struggles and the dark side of business, I want to call it, then I think people get caught off guard when the reality of the leadership gravity hits them. So I think first step is vulnerability and really being honest with your team and honest with those who are coming up. And then it's just having one-to-one conversations with your team on a regular basis. I think that's something that people underappreciate, is just an hour to an hour and a half, phones off. We're just you and me, we're having a conversation and we're talking about what you want to accomplish in this world, in this life, and at this company. And when you identify those folks in your organization who want to achieve more and want to climb the ladder to become a leader, that's when you have, you know, you put a star next to their name and you say, I'm going to spend a little extra time with Amy or Jeremy or whoever it is. and you're going to help coach them on what leadership means. Because to grow a business to 10 employees, you can do that pretty good with nine helpers and yourself. To grow a company to 100 employees, you need 10 leaders with 10 helpers each. And to get to that point of having having 10 leaders in the company, you've got to develop them. They're not going to necessarily just come walking off the street. And even some of the best leaders I met off the street haven't lasted more than 2 weeks because their leadership style does not mesh with our core values and our culture. So I think at the end of the day, vulnerability comes first. It's identifying the people who have that hunger to become a leader and who want the responsibility. And then it's coaching them on a week by week basis, helping them achieve their goals by telling them stories of what you've gone through. And that kind of, you know, follows the flywheel back to being vulnerable and sharing your experience.
Great. I love how articulate you are in explaining all this. And I know you've just been like figuring it out and you're just a student of all this stuff at the same time. So really, really appreciate that. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I've never heard it explained so simply, Justin, that, okay, to get to 10 people, you know, you have one leader and nine helpers. Okay. What does it take to get to 100 employees? Well, you need 10 leaders with nine helpers each. I never heard it explained so simply. And I think your formula for the one-on-ones, the 1 to 1.5 hours of what do you want to accomplish on this planet? What do you want your life to mean something? And what does that mean to you? And what do you want to accomplish at that company? And it sounds like you're listening for clues as to the people that have a little bit more of a hunger to succeed, and you're putting a star by their name and you're making a note, you know, I should invest a little bit more time in that person. And it seems like it only comes from those one-on-ones. I feel like people are much different in a group setting than they are one-on-one. And to feel like you're getting that direct attention from the boss, you know, it means something. It's like a real imprint. And so, thanks. I'm learning a lot just from listening to you right now.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we've been focusing on sort of the positive side of business and family business, which is, you know, we're finding maybe people who are humble and hungry and seem like they're good team players and they want to scale up themselves, level up themselves. Well, what do we do when we have the challenge we're facing with someone who's sort of being outgrown by the company? You know, I know, Justin, early working with you, there were some people that were treasured employees by your dad. And when you took them over, they became less than treasured. They were difficult to work with. It was difficult to find the right seat to put them in. I think in most cases, you were successful with transitioning those people and finding the right place for them in the company. But it's not always that easy. And it's particularly difficult when it's a family member and you're trying to deal with the challenges there. So any thoughts you want to share on that?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest challenges to growth. So for everyone listening who's looking to grow or is currently growing, I think one of the biggest realizations that you have to come to is, let's say you have 10 employees right now and you're looking to grow to 10 million, 100 employees. Those 10 employees are all you know. They're your family. And the hard part about growth and 10xing a company is that, you know, more than likely 7 of those 10 people won't be with you in 5 or 10 years. Because what happens is they aren't able to grow at the pace you're needing to grow at, or the company's needing them to grow at. And you have to hire people above them. And hiring a manager for someone who's worked for your family business for 20 years is one of the most difficult conversations you'll ever have. Having to let an employee go because you've given them the opportunity to step up at that level and they're not performing, and you have to let them go. I had to let go of one of my best friends 4.5 years ago. And it was tears, emotional. I'm really happy to say that he's back working in the company in a different position that fits him much better. And he's excelling at a great pace. But what you'll do is you'll put people into positions because they've been at the company for a long time, not because they're the best for that position. And I think, you know, this is a constant problem with growing companies. And so what you have to do, I think, is come up with your really clear 10-year plan, like your BHAG, right? Ours is to grow to 30 million by 2030. And then you have to back that down into a 5-year plan and back that down into a 2-year plan. And when you get your 2-year plan laid out of where you want to be in 24 months, you got to build an organization chart of what your company looks like in 24 months. And you have to start looking at who you have on the team today and what open positions you're going to have to fill in 24 months. Who is going to be able to move up and who may not be able to move up? And those people who are either going to move up or not, you need to talk to them today. Say, hey, Frank, in 2 years, I'm going to need a VP of construction. Hey, in 2 years, I'm going to need a sales manager. This is an opportunity for you, but this is what you have to do to get there. And some people are going to say, awesome, I love the idea, I'm going to go for it, and they're going to fail. Some people are going to like the idea, they're going to go for it, they're going to succeed. Some people are going to say, you know, that's not for me. And now you have a green light from that employee to hire someone above them. And either they want to do it and they succeed, great. They don't want to do it, and now you know you have to recruit in someone else. That's great too, because now you have clarity. The employee has clarity. You include them in the interview process, and that's a successful transition. But no matter what you do, when you grow a company, you outgrow people, and it's one of the hardest conversations. When it's a family member who has equity, it gets really sticky because they have equity. They're pretty much guaranteed to be an employee, and you have to work a little bit harder with those individuals. And that's where having a coach comes in handy. I mean, Jonathan, like, how many times have you been in the room with the family and we're having like emotional, tears out, blowout conversations? Because to run a family business, you have to be extremely candid and you have to be completely, you know, brutally honest. And when you're brutally honest, you hurt people's feelings, but it's really the only way to deal with that situation. And my sister is a great example of someone who left the company because she didn't feel like she had a place. She took 2 years off. She's back today and she's doing fantastic. And she's not in a leadership role, but she's in a role that fits her really well. And she's really successful at what she does. So there's a lot. And that's all just, you know, I'm not saying that's the right way or wrong way to do things. That's just what we've experienced at K&D over the last 5 years.
Yeah, we could do a whole show just on the challenges of working with family members and difficult conversations and conflict. Too often I find that people don't want to come on the show and openly talk about that stuff unless it's from a historical perspective. You know, if you have a framework for healthy dynamics where there's an emotional bond that is stronger than whatever fight is going to tear you down. I mean, I've seen you and your brother fight, and sometimes I think, wow, that's like vicious. But then, like, you know, a half hour later, you guys are hugging and laughing and planning your next, you know, snowboarding or dirt biking excursion. So, like, I think it's really remarkable how families can work together and balance out that emotional component with the, you know, moving the business forward and seeing that as the common goal. So
exactly.
Yep. Yeah. So I did mention that I said someone should say something to me about the fact that you had a dirt biking accident a couple of years ago. Yeah. And it sidelined you for almost 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And so that was a great learning lesson for you to see how would the business would run in your absence? And what are some of your memories of that? Maybe the takeaways from it.
Oh, well, just for everyone listening, it was definitely one of the most traumatic accidents. I've broken a lot of bones and, you know, racing dirt bikes, it kind of comes with the territory, but this one was different. I broke my femur right in the middle, complete break. It wasn't a compound, so it wasn't like sticking out of the skin, but, you know, your legs basically just, you know, hanging there. So I was way in the backwoods in Northern California. you know, had to get a ride out with a pickup truck and finally got in a fire truck. And then they drove me down to get me in a helicopter. And, you know, it was just a huge ordeal. The amount of pain I went through was almost a, it was an experience that I'm very grateful for today. It was almost like a hallucinogenic acid trip. You know, the amount of bone marrow released in your body and the amount of endorphins and all this stuff working in your brain took me to a place that I've never been before. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity, even though it was one of the most traumatic, if not the most traumatic event I went through. So that alone gave me a lot to think about and made me feel very human. And then the recovery process taught me a lot of lessons too. And that was a point I did a lot of reflecting on my life, a lot of reading. And I took it as an opportunity to really reflect on where I'm at, what I'm doing, because it was a very, close to death experience. You know, the nurse and the surgeon, you know, made a point to tell me how easily I could have died, which, you know, I didn't need all that, but they made sure I knew that. And, you know, it makes someone reflect on life. But what happened was, this was on a Sunday. And so I'm in the emergency room, surgery. I'm out of it for like 4 days. I was in the hospital with really no ability to communicate or do anything. So my team had to carry on in my absence. And it was a great experience. Leaders stepped up. People who were not even leaders or managers stepped up as leaders in that time because someone needed to. One person that really shined above the rest was my cousin Jessica. She, you know, was our office manager. Now she's our director of administration. And she stepped up. She basically took on the role of interim CEO, if you will, ran the leadership meetings. My brother was right there next to her. Same thing. He stepped up. And it was an amazing experience to see my team continue to carry on when I'm in the hospital. And once I even got back to my house, we have a two-story house. I didn't come downstairs for over 3 weeks. I was just like bedridden. So while I'm in bed, the team continues to flourish. This was in July. So it was a very difficult, busy time. They continue to land projects. They continue to run the business, and things continued without me even being there. And that was a humbling time because there is a bit of an ego that builds within a CEO who grows a company like I have. I'll admit it. You have this ego like, well, if I wasn't here, you know, you guys probably wouldn't be able to do this. And that proved me wrong. That proved that no matter what happens to me, I've got the systems and the team in place to continue to carry on, not just in running the business, but in growing the business. So it's just a great experience overall. Even though it could have been a little more traumatic, I took it as a positive. And I built a lot of confidence within my leadership team that they can do this without me. I've been more free and more autonomous since that moment and since that experience. I've been able to do more innovation and visionary type of activities. If you're familiar with EOS, I'm doing more visionary than I am integrator role. And that was a forced transition that otherwise I don't know if we'd be here today had it not been that forced removal of myself from the office.
Yeah. So are you more cautious now when you think about going snowboarding or dirt bike racing or doing dangerous stuff? And I'll ask the same question of Chris, because he's a relatively new father and, you know, also, you know, similar age, a little younger. So are you more careful now?
You know, this was the one that did slow me down. I thought I was, you know, unbreakable up until this point. But just last week, and I was doing a go-kart race, you know, little go-karts, you know, you go and they go pretty fast. They go like 45 miles an hour on this little course. And I found myself like really being cautious on the course. And it's not my style. I'll, you know, take it into the wall, whatever. I don't really care. But I found myself like hitting the brakes and be like, God, you can pass me. Like, it's all good. I don't want to get hurt. So yeah, it had a mental toll on my body. And even when I'm riding my mountain bike or riding my dirt bike or whatever, it's in the back of my head. Like, I really don't want to have to go through that again. as much lessons as I've learned, I don't want to have to be in the hospital for a week. It's not a fun experience.
Yeah. Well, I knew when I had a newborn baby, my wife made me get rid of the 2-seater convertible. She was like, yep, yeah, you're not taking my baby around in that. Chris, what about you? Has your life, have you, your risk-taking approach as an entrepreneur and your risk-taking approach in life, like with physical stuff, has it changed since you became a father?
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of my more reckless behavior has evened out in a very welcoming way. But if you're asking specifically about my body, I'm seeing my body more and more as a vehicle that needs routine maintenance, that needs to be invested in, that, you know, needs to be rested and given the right gifts to operate at efficiency. And I notice when my body is working better and the check engine light isn't on, and, you know, I've replaced the fuel tank, that I operate a little bit better. My decisions are a little bit more clear. My communication's a little bit better. And this is largely a new experience. I'm not saying I've figured it out, but have that mindset definitely has shifted. So I'm there with you guys.
Yeah, well, I'm older than the two of you guys combined in age, and I'm in the shop a lot, so I know if you don't take care of your body, I mean, I still would love to jump off a 20-foot cliff on my skis, but I dare not do that anymore. So, yeah.
So I want to just hit on that note, because I think, Chris, you brought up something that's so important, which is taking care of ourselves. And Jonathan, so I'm going to put you on the spot. So, you know, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, knowing what you know today, and you had 5 minutes, you know, what would be like the first couple sentences you would tell yourself?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, listening to and knowing the two of you, I would say, you know, live all out. But be mindful that, you know, the risk that you're going to take, be they physical or, you know, risks that could get you in trouble with the law, or, you know, risk where you could, you know, lose all your fortune or whatever you have, you know, saved. I mean, that you have to balance those two things out, and that you have to balance not only, you have to balance the short term with the long term. And so, I mean, maybe that's a little abstract for a young person to understand, but, you know, physically, I think you have to push yourself and test the limits of your edge, and know that sort of as a David Goggins thought, which is that, you know, if you think you're at your edge, you're only at what, 40% or something,
40%, yeah.
You know? So, you know, your physical body, your mental capability, it can do so much more. And so stretch yourself, you know, get involved in, like, I was doing and promoting Tony Robbins workshops when Tony was 27 and I was, I think, 28, or he was 25 and I was 27. I mean, you know, those types of things, doing a firewalk, certainly stretched my mind. Like, is this possible? I know you guys have both done that. And, you know, so stretching yourself, but don't be a fool. So
I think that's some great advice right there. And Chris, I didn't know you were a Tony Robbins clan member.
Yeah. I've gone back and I've crewed several events, and I actually was able to experience a lot more by being in service to others than I was as a participant. So definitely recommend it if you ever get the chance.
Wow. That's a leadership lesson right there. Huh?
Like, how? Right. Yeah. Like, so you're getting more out of the event when you're helping others.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'll just share is that the expectation is that I'm representing something. Someone else sees me wearing that t-shirt, like, I represent a set of values that I need to embody in this moment, because people paid some damn good money to be there. And, you know, I carried it as a different kind of responsibility, because I take transformation very seriously. And I don't know, just being in service and representing those values to me help reinforce and give me a completely different experience. I wanted to just address the exact same advice that I would tell 20-year-old me is if I'm able to travel in time and actually listen to this podcast episode at some point when I'm anyway, that's not exactly how time travel works. But what I would say to 20-year-old me is like, please don't start drinking. Please start investing money. if I had not ever started drinking and if I had started to invest money, life would be a lot different now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Justin, I can remember us going out to one of our first retreats and you hit a few cocktails pretty hard. And I thought, oh boy, is he going to make it into the next day? And then like last week I was doing a offsite retreat with someone and it was the first day. It was kind of a kickoff meeting and the CEO came in at the last minute. I was just about to chide him about, you know, this is no way to show up. But then he showed up sort of hungover on top of it and explained that he was at an investor meeting the night before. So I've seen a lot from both of you. And I think, you know, Chris, your story about coming out the other side and being sober and what you've learned from that and what you've been able to share and how you've been able to lead others and is just so noble. And, you know, it's been such a great journey watching the two of you grow. Amazing.
Well, Chris, I don't know all the details. I'd love to learn them about it one day, but you know, your advice is great. And especially about the drinking part. I think it's this kind of this underground, not talked about too much thing in our society. Alcohol is in everything, right? It's at every conference. It's mixed in with business. And yeah, I drank pretty heavily from like, I got my fake ID when I was 16. And so the liquor store sold me everything. Yeah. So like, and I was a working man, blue collar working man at 16, right? I wasn't going to high school. So we'd get drunk every night, 7 days a week. We'd be drinking, you know, a 12, 18 pack of Coors Light. And that was just what we did. I had some pretty big health issues that hit me, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I had to change my habits. And Tony Robbins was a big part of that. I went to my first UPW 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Yeah, 2018. And that changed my life. I have dramatically reduced my alcohol intake. And last September, I pretty much took 6 months off. And I'm down to like a glass or two of wine a week. And so I'm not necessarily going the hard sober route, but I found something that works for me. And I think it's something that I like to share the story with people because a lot of people see it as you're either all in or you're all out. And I think there is a slight sliver of folks who can sit in that, you know, just they can enjoy a cocktail once in a while. But, you know, I haven't been drunk for over a year. I haven't had a hangover for a long time. So I think that type of change for me was transformative for my business and not only my business, but my personal relationship at home with my now fiance.
It's great. Learning can be done in so many different ways. And so it's so important to underscore the importance of learning and growing and really being earnest about it and being honest with ourselves about whether we are learning or, you know, whether our arrogance is getting in our way, because it's certainly arrogance and leadership do not go well together, in my opinion. So, well, guys, we could sit here for another hour, but I think we might lose like a lot of listeners. So how do we wrap this up? So Justin, what are your future plans for K&D?
So any of you are listening and, you know, you're thinking about turning it off, give us another few minutes, because I think we got some good takeaways here at the very end. So before I forget, I wanted to say the one-to-ones are super important. And Jonathan, you're the one that helped me come up with the format on how to perform and produce a one-to-one with a key employee. So I would just say, if you guys are listening and you want to start to have one-to-ones with your employees, great way to reach out to Jonathan. He's got a form I'm sure he's willing to share with you guys.
Yeah, you can download it on my site at disruptivesuccessor.com. Download a free chapter and grab the tools. And that's one of the tools is one-on-ones with managers. Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention that, and I wasn't rehearsed or anything. I don't even know you can do that on your website. So I'm going to do that. Check it out. Anyway. All right. So K&D. So we have big plans. and, you know, I see this thing on Instagram all the time. I follow these business pages. People like, you know, don't tell anyone your plans, just do it. I could not disagree more. I think it's so key to talk to the universe, anyone that'll listen, what your plans are. I mean, what's the worst case? Someone's going to steal your idea and do it better.
Right.
No. Like no one's stealing your idea. Sorry. So here's the deal. K&D, we're building towards a family of companies. What we're finding out is there are a lot of needs in our industry that are not being filled by any one company. So one specific situation or one specific income stream is irrigation. Irrigation is always a secondary income stream for landscape companies. You get in, you do the maintenance, you mow the lawns, and then you adjust the controller every now and then. Well, on the West Coast of California, water is becoming one of the most expensive utilities for properties. It's becoming more expensive than sometimes even the lease of the building. You know, you've got these facilities, these HOAs and large campuses who are spending $10,000 to $20,000 a month on water. So our take is if we can get in there, we can manage the water with a proprietary software and put our own system in place that we can manage the water on a minute by minute, day by day basis. And we can reduce the water use by 20, 30, 40%. The savings can really add up. So again, no landscape company, at least in our area, there are some people doing it around the country, but on the Central Coast, there's no one focused on irrigation management. So that's our next big business opportunity we're launching right now, where we're actually going to go in, we're going to install a flow sensor, a flow meter, a master valve, and a smart controller. They're all connected to Wi-Fi through our system and manage the water being applied to every site. You know, a lot of people are getting put into drought restrictions. You know, we guarantee we'll keep our client within the budget that's required for the city or the water district and save the money in the long run. Water, you know, there's a headline I just saw, 300,000 acres were not farmed in the Central Valley of California due to water allocations. That is only going to get picked up. The more housing we have and the less water we have, the less that's going to be allocated to agricultural and even less to landscaping. So this is our big next thing, which we're launching 10-1. We're doing kind of like a heavy launch. We've recruited some really amazing people in the irrigation industry. And we're hoping to really solve the water issue that we're seeing in California for landscaping specifically. And beyond that, we're not sure, but we do believe that water management is going to be the future of landscaping. And without water management, you're not going to have any landscaping. So that's exciting for us. And then we have a lot of other things that we're working on in the background around other income streams that we're going to specifically go after and build teams around. So we're excited for that.
That's a great story in and of itself. Solving one of California's biggest problems is that we're in an extreme drought, a mega drought. It's over 20 years in the making. Who knows when it's going to end? Our fires are getting out of control. So really glad to hear that you're making headway on that, have a big vision around it, see that it ties in with your purpose, which is something that was, I think, an inflection point in K&D's company was when I remember sitting around the table at a planning session talking about what this purpose of this company could be. And we hit upon this concept of raising the bar. And then I've said this many times in many situations where, and I talk about this in the book, by the way, where everything in the business became about raising the bar. It became like hiring and their people raising the bar. Your involvement in the community, your involvement in the landscape industry, raising the bar. You know, your visibility at all levels, you know, giving back and teaching, and about setting a big, hairy, audacious goal for 10, 15 years out around revenue and employees. And so much of it has been about raising the bar. And mm-hmm. so I want to just hold you up as an example of a client who, when they came upon a purpose that was uniquely yours, that you owned, that was embraced by the people in the company, it was reinforced constantly, that how much that can change an organization and create momentum. You talked about the flywheel. It makes the flywheel move a lot faster. So important to find our purpose in life. And I think you did a great job with that. So,
Thank you.
All right. I want to give a plug for my producer. Again, Chris, I've known you for at least 10 years now, and I've seen you iterate a number of businesses in technology space. You have a terrific growing podcasting company, and I know you've had your own podcast, and I know you've written one book, and you're probably already working on your second. So I know you probably have some big plans as well. If you want to share that, now's a great time.
Yeah. And instead of sharing the big plans, I'll just share where we are. Is a lot of the assumptions that went into SalesCast and a lot of the purpose and the vision is continuing to shift as we experiment and we learn and we grow. We're not where Justin is today at that mark. we have a long way to go. We're looking at more like a $250,000 ARR right now. But I would say that I still have this feeling that there's we're discovering our footing. We're earning our place in the market. Some days I feel beaten down and tired and don't want to keep going. But there is a vision that is drawing us forward to capture stories, to share them, to change how sales are done by building more connections and more relationships. When I'm reminded of why we're doing what we're doing, it's real easy to get back up, peel myself off the floor, and get back to work. We're really in the thick of it as a business, almost a year and a half in the technology world. That's a long time. That's like a tech decade. And I already have my first gray hair or two. I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of the work we're doing. I'm proud of the team that we're building. I'm proud of who I'm becoming by doing this company. I'm proud of who my co-founder is becoming and his journey and story. So just an appreciation and gratitude for this exact moment. All of the struggles, all of the successes, all of the wins, it means something today. You want to follow what we're doing, check out salescast.co. We're about building new relationships with your ideal clients, cultivating community through impactful content, and ultimately driving more ethical revenue in your business through that platform. And it would just be an honor to speak with you. We're always happy to help and consult wherever we can. So that's kind of our mindset.
Well, so great to have both of you on the show today. I know you can reach Justin White. You can find him through K&D Landscaping in Santa Cruz, California, or through LinkedIn. And his contact information will be in the show notes. Of course, you can find SalesCast as well, because they're my producer. Guys, this is officially the longest podcast I've ever recorded. And it's been a total pleasure. And I hope that you as a listener, if you're still on board, you'll send me a note saying, hey, I really enjoyed that. Can you introduce me to Chris or Justin, or I like what he said here, or I'd like to connect with one of you. So if you enjoyed this show, listen, share, subscribe, and stay tuned for future episodes of the Disruptive Successor Show. Thanks. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.